Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Superintendents Unplugged, In Depth with Davis, the podcast where we'll dive deep into the world of educational leadership. I'm your host, Addison Davis, and I'm thrilled to have you join me as we embark on the inspiring journey together. As a superintendent once myself, I understand the challenges and complexities that come with leading a school district. But what I've come to realize is that there's abundance of amazing work being done by superintendents all across our country. This podcast is a platform to shine a spotlight on their incredible accomplishments and innovative approaches. Each episode will bring you exclusive interviews and superintendents from various districts across our country, both big and small, urban and rural, as they share their personal stories, triumphs, and even their moments of vulnerability. We will explore the strategies they employ to tackle the ever-evolving landscape of education, from fostering equity and inclusivity to embracing technology and preparing students for their future. But this podcast isn't just about showcasing success. It's about fostering a community of educational leaders who can learn from one another, share their experiences, and collectively navigate the complexities of our role. We'll discuss the tough topics as well, the difficult decisions, and the innovative solutions that are transforming education for the better. So while you're an educator, a parent, a student, are simply someone who's passionate about education, this podcast is for you. Superintendents Unplugged is your behind-the-scenes pass to the world of educational leadership, where we uncover the stories that inspire, motivate, and empower every one of us. Get ready to be inspired, challenged, and entertained as we embark on this incredible journey together. I can't wait to introduce you to the remarkable superintendents who are changing the educational landscape one district at a time. Welcome to another episode of Superintendents Unplugged, In Depth with Davis. I'm your host, Addison Davis. Here today, we have Dr. John Gordon III from Suffolk Public Schools. Thank you for being with me, Doc. Really appreciate it. And how's the conference going so far?
Conference is going outstanding. I mean, it's more than just coming here to get professional learning. To me, I think 50% of it is just a strong networking that we all do. And you get a chance to see some friends and some colleagues that are going through the same struggles and challenges that you are.
You know, it's easily, you know, we could always stay in our community, in our school district, and just have those blinders on. But being able to get out and see, I'm talking about thousands and thousands of teachers, educators, administrators, solution offerings, and be able to pick their brains, to dive into it, it's so important. And I see you navigating around here doing those things.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that's what it is. And one of the things you'll find out, you think, especially sitting in this seat, you a lot of times you feel like a sense of being alone.
Right.
But then once you get a chance to talk with your colleagues and collaborate, you realize everybody's going through the same things at the same time. But, you know, it's just a different locality.
Right.
And a lot of times it's going to be magnified based on how large the school division is, or in some cases, how much you push back as well.
That's right, sir. And, you know, we talk about, you know, where we are and where we're moving educationally. The landscape is completely different.
Oh, man.
I mean, listen, you know, there's so much that we are empowered to do by boards, mm-hmm. and to focus on providing endless possibilities for students instructionally, to be able to create a psychologically safe place, to make certain that students have a number of activities, curricular, co-curricular, extracurricular activities. But what you've done, some cool things. You are the only elementary in the state to have a STEM opportunity.
Yes, sir.
So talk about what does that look like? What's the origin from it?
Sure.
And how are kids thriving in that situation?
Well, you know, what's interesting is, you know, I'm in Virginia and Governor Youngkin came out with this concept of having lab schools about, okay. you know, a lot of opportunities to create basically K-12 university sure. partnerships. And everyone that was doing it was just partnering with the high school level, which makes a lot of sense. Career opportunities, transition to upper education, you know, those types of stuff. But in Suffolk, we were trying to be a little different.
Right.
And I had already had a partnership with 21st Century Ed for developing this sustainable STEM model. So I kind of wanted to try to develop a K-12 one. Right. And we did our application for our lab school at Booker T. Washington Elementary School.
Okay.
That officially starts in the fall. And we just did all of our, it was a round robin lottery. 120 seats, 20 per grade level, and the equipment, the hands-on activities, the maker spaces. I mean, my kids are using 3D printers. they're doing so many great things that's going to be able to have their technology, not only a system of instruction, but also a system of life.
It's awesome.
But the main thing is they're getting that early exposure.
Sure.
Which just doesn't happen at the elementary school level. So once you see what other people are doing, it's always been my path to do it a little bit differently.
Sure.
That, to me, is really the true definition of innovation. But it's also things that kind of helps put our school division on hold.
Yeah, you just said it beautifully. Innovation isn't about doing more.
No.
Innovation is about doing things differently. And what does it look like to be able to make those, you know, hands-on inquiry-based opportunities for students to really dive in and to be exposed to high-level technology, robotics, active engagement. I mean, those are the things we do and bring it back to the core content and make those interaction connections. At the same time of it, as you continue to move forward, you've done some cool things in your school district to, you know, Nike. What's going on? What's going on with Nike showing up at your school district and being a brand, a partnership of excellence every single day?
I mean, I think that's what part of it is. You know, so I'm a former high school basketball coach, did that for 10 years, you know. That was hard giving up because you really just enjoy the connections you make, the relationships.
Listen, I remember being a coach today. That's why I had to stack some money, but I love to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, as a teacher, I had to make some money, man.
But one of the things you realize is instead of coaching kids, now I'm coaching adults.
That's right.
And so I took over this job October 14, 2019, 5 months before the pandemic hit. You know, so I really had to do a lot of things just to kind of keep us prepared. But the first thing I did, I think Suffolk was a little bit behind, in my opinion. Kids weren't one-to-one throughout, you know, they would one-to-one during the day, but they couldn't take their Chromebooks home. That was the first thing I did. The second thing I did was bring in this Nike deal. And I went through Boo Williams, who's a, you know, Nike legend, AAU grassroots type guy. And he just, they knew me from my coaching days. They knew me a little bit from my playing days. And once I said, I want to do this across the board, my elementary kids wearing intramurals, wearing Nikes.
Everybody got
middle school kids. And it's just, to me, it was something that to really help to make the kids want to come to school.
Yeah.
When they see that swoosh, it just gives them an additional sense of pride, belonging, helps them with their dreams. If they're coming to school, this means their grades will be better. And, you know, of course, we want to be able to join activities and play sports. And it's, to me, it's a part of that infrastructure.
Sure.
The Nike deal, turf fields that we did at all three of our high schools, brand new stadiums. I've always believed that the more kids are involved in school, the better your school community is going to be. If kids are doing sports and other clubs and things like that, grades go up, classroom management goes down. I mean, it's just an easy formula. And I also wanted to make it so that, okay, what can we do to make Suffolk have like a national brand? So there was a Nike deal with the partnership through BSN, but it was also our partnership with Pepsi. And I wanted to make our school self-sufficient because you know how it is. As a superintendent, we can always give the schools what they need, but we can't always give them what they want. So when they have this additional revenue coming from Pepsi or the discounts we get from Nike, these are the types of things that allow the schools to keep that revenue and to purchase some of those things that their faculty ask for.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, it's you know, really cool related to, you talk about sense of pride, showing up every single day, elementary, middle, high schools, teachers, community members, to see your logo, that swoosh, to be able to do it. And it creates equity for everyone.
It does.
And, you know, I would give you a hard time from the Pepsi side to the Coke side. I'm going to let it lie, let it roll.
Right.
But also, you know, it's not only that you're building that community of cohesiveness. You know what? You're giving them a sense of hope every single day. They can do cool things and have the best.
It's the best
every single day.
It's so true. And one of the things that we see is at the corporate level or even the professional sports level, people want to be associated with successful brands.
That's right.
So now my local businesses and partners, because we're doing that, now we have a huge list.
Right?
A huge list of just showing their partnership with Suffolk Public Schools, really being able to create this positive narrative.
Right.
And like you said, giving the school community a sense of pride that it wasn't always there.
That's awesome. I mean, we can say it, little things matter.
They do.
They build up so much trust, so much, you know, opportunity for children, and you're doing it. Let's move to the political landscape of what we're seeing nowadays in education. Right? It's honestly been tough.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, I was Soup for 9 years and led the 7 largest district in the nation. But I didn't have to. I came in on the backside of what, you know, is happening currently, right? So how are you, you know, look at superintendents. You know, you've been superintendent for 5+ years, right? So navigating through that, it's not been easy.
It hasn't. And I think that the biggest challenge is it changes almost from year to year or leader to leader.
Sure.
You know, so, you know, I speak all over the country, several associations, really talking to principals a lot. And one of the things I talk to them about is finding ways to stay purple.
Right.
And that's hard. You know, that's hard because you have your different groups or wherever your locality may be, if it's red or blue. A lot of times depends on funding, what terminology you use.
Sure.
That's hard. But if you stay purple and keep kids first,
that's right,
you're always going to do okay. And the challenge is that this means that you need to have your other leaders within your school division mimicking that. This sure. means that your faculty needs to understand sometimes it's not going to always be about you. It's going to be about the kids and sure. their needs. And we, to be honest, you really shouldn't be discussing politics in school a lot anyway.
That's right. There's no place for it. But you talk about staying purple, mm-hmm. you know, and let's look at it. School boards, you know what? Some are red, some are blue. I mean, right? You know, I mean, it is what it is.
Yeah.
How do you navigate through that? Because you know what? Sometimes while if we focus on kids, all that noise should go away. But let's look at the politics. Let's be real. The noise doesn't go away. It's straight in front. It's in front of you. And now more than ever, our job as superintendents, we got to be political.
We do. We do. And to be honest, I think it's the most political position in your locality.
Yeah.
And a lot of it's going to depend on whatever the partisan of the majority of your board is. Because, you know, people are happy campaigns. They're going to say what they're going to say when they're running for office.
Yeah.
But once they get into office,
kind of stuff.
Oh, my God. Once they get into office, it's a little bit different. And so right. it's your job to try to almost give them an eye-opening experience. You may have had this perception when you were running. But now that you're actually in the seat, here's what the policy actually right. says. Here's what the practice really does. I think that's where our jobs come in as superintendents. Then, unfortunately, or fortunately, how you want to put it, we have to be able to have the evidence and the process that shows that what we're doing is correct. And whatever we do, it has to be sustainable. So, you know, in my school division, for example, our school board members are elected every 2 years.
Right.
It's staggered. Four wow. 1 year,
okay,
you know, yeah, and then yeah. 3 2 years that later.
Makes sense.
And so now, you know, I have two original board members left on the board that hired me. And so my new job is to make sure that my new board members or those that are relatively new
right.
understand here's the reason and the why we did these things. You know, there has to be data that supports it. This is the reason why I'm making these choices for funding. I'm asking for your support on this. And right. then if you can't do that, then okay, what's the compromise? Just don't tell me no because of your political agenda.
That's right.
You have to tell me no or not support it because you have a concern about it. And that's where we have to challenge them, right? That's where we have to ask the correct questions. You feel this way, but what's the reason why? Okay, if you're not going to support that, then what's your solution?
That's right.
And if you those follow-up questions, those are the things that kind of helps you out, but also lets you know if people are doing things for kids or if they're doing
that's right.
for reasons.
That's right. And, you know, said it so well, Doc. The other thing is that how do you get board members to that center? I mean, and you just talked about every 2 years, you're flipping boards and everybody across this nation's flipping boards, right? Potentially. Right. While we all love stability, sometimes people like not to run. Sometimes other things happen.
Yeah.
It's hard having to, you talk about catch them up on the rationale many years of why decisions have been made.
Yeah.
Because they come in gung-ho, they want to change the world, they see all these things, but they understand there's so much more to it, right?
Yeah.
So how do you bring them together, catch them up to speed where they understand this is what's working, this is what's not, this is why we did it, this is what we plan to do differently?
Yeah, I think a lot of it depends on your school boards need to have a strong onboarding process themselves.
Don't just let them show up, right,
yeah,
Doc?
Yeah.
They can't just show up. Spend time with them.
They can't. You know, my clerk, she gives them a binder about this thick. And then my team and myself, we kind of track major topics they were discussing right. during their campaign trail. And then shortly after they're elected, I meet with them.
Sure.
I bring them in and I say, okay, tell me about three things that you really want to do. And try to get their line of reason. Tell me about three things that you're hearing about the school division that you may have concerns with. Then I challenge them and say, tell me about three things you really like
right.
about the school division.
Right.
And that's the question a lot of times that catches them off guard. Because the majority of people that run up an office have the hero complex, but they want to be able to save the world, right? That as soon as they get on the board or as soon as they take the seat or whatever, they are going to be the ones that's going to make everything better.
Right.
But them understanding the process of how things work is something that you have to educate them on. Then the last part is really about just a collaboration between individual board members, because that's what I'm saying, right? Yeah. You have a lot of butting heads on the dais. And it's not always directed at me or my team. But
it comes about them.
Yeah. And I tell them.
It hurts brand sometimes.
It does, man. And then what I always say is our kids are watching. That's my go-to.
Yeah.
My kids are watching, man. You know? So I think getting them to understand that now that you're in this seat as a school board member, regardless of what you used to be,
sure.
Every time you come on school property or go somewhere in the community, you are now that school
that's
board.
That's right. That's right.
Well, I'm a dad first. Yeah, that's true. But you're also this school board.
Absolutely. You know? And we get it. Like, listen, you run and you've got influencers, you made these promises, but sometimes those promises are not reality that we can actually implement and drive within our community. For those who are watching who aspire to be superintendents, words of wisdom.
So first of all, I really think you need to understand the current political climate. I mean, I think that's just number one.
Nowadays, off the rip.
Yeah, that's the reality of it all. Second of all, when you create your plan, don't deviate from it. It's okay to make tweaks, but I think there's a difference between making a tweak and deviating from it, right? You got to study your school division that you're applying for, know the instructional data, find out who the major players are, and then make that a part of your interview.
Sure.
As soon as you do that, then it's really about you connecting with the board. There's so many great educational leaders that are out here that probably have been passed over for specific jobs only because they didn't have a strong connection with the board.
Right.
It doesn't mean you're not a good superintendent. It doesn't mean that you're not a good leader. It's about that synergy with the school board and then making sure that you use that to show that unified front when it comes to dealing with the community,
right.
When it comes to dealing with your local legislators or whoever your funding source is, so that everyone can be on the same page when it comes to asking for money, right? I think those are the key tips that I talk about a lot when I'm out here working with aspiring educators at all levels, because it's filtered down to the principal position too. But at the same time, as soon as you can reinforce the keeping the kids first, understanding what it means to be a public figure, because that's key too,
right?
And then lastly, building that coalition of allies, that whoever you have that's in your circle, that's in your network, they can support you in your work, because you're going to need them at some point in time.
That's right. You know, never forget those. I mean, we've all mentored and been and have mentees, and never forget those individuals on both sides of it, because that's where we grow and that's our give back as well.
Yes.
Well, you've heard it, Doc. Thank you for being here with me today.
Thank
guys, you've heard it. Dr. John Gordon III,
right.
Rocking and rolling every single day, bringing innovation to elementary, being able to look at branding across the entire district to give everyone a systemic, you know, part of doing cool things. But at the same token, being able to show how you navigate through boards and do successful things with it. Until next time, I look forward to seeing you in classrooms. I'm Madison Davis. Look forward to seeing you.